So last week we had done some of the fundamentals of Vedanta. What is body, what is mind, what is intellect, what are the vasanas, and some of the other concepts about the waker, the dreamer, the deep sleeper, and all those, and how to go beyond I and mine, and who is the experiencer, experienced, and experiencing. So those are the three, and that we talked last week. So this chapter is quite long, so I thought we would continue for a second week. And today we are going to talk about the five sheaths. Sheath, just as a sword has a sheath or a covering, but does not touch the sword, but appears to cover the sword. Similarly, the life or consciousness within us is apparently covered by five sheaths. That's why we say, oh, I can't see God. Why? Because he's covered. So what are the five sheaths? So the first one is the food sheath. So the first sheath is the body, which is called the food sheath. And the body is made out of food. You know, first of all, the food created by, eaten by the father and mother gives rise to the fetus in the womb. And then the fetus grows because of food eaten by the mother. And she nourishes the child till the child is ready to be born at 9 months. And then after that also, we are nourished by food. Think how much food we eat every day, how much we have eaten all these 50, 60, 70 years, 3 meals a day, 4 meals a day. Sometimes we eat 5 meals a day, even a midnight snack. So count all the food that we have eaten, and that gives rise to this body, which is called the food sheath. The next is the physiological functions, and we'll talk about them a little later. But these are all the internal functionings of the body. Or we can talk about it right now. So there are five functions: prana, apana, samana, dhyana, and udana. Prana, apana, samana, dhyana, and udana. So prana is the intake. So whatever we take in, we think intake is only from the mouth, but we also take in from the nose, the smells and the air, the eyes, the sights, the ears, the sounds, the taste, the touch. So whatever we take in from all our intake is called prana. And then whatever we excrete is called apana, the excretory. So all the excretory functions, those are called apana, which we excrete. And then digestion. Digestion is called samana. So when we eat the food, it gets digested. And then the circulatory system is called dhyana. Actually, in those days, think about it, thousands of years ago, they knew about the circulatory system, digestive system, intake, excrete, all those functions they knew. They also knew about the 9 planets and how they circulate around, you know, around the sun, and the exact location, and they could predict. So even in those days, without telescopes and without microscopes, they knew all the functions of the body and the solar system. And this is several thousand years ago, much before the birth of Christ. Can you imagine the wisdom of those great rishis? And the fifth function, so intake, excretion, digestion, circulation, is called udana. In the book, it is said the capacity to think, the capacity to go higher. Some scholars say udana is the force at the time of death. The subtle body, the mind and intellect, needs to be pushed out. At the time of death, we have to drop this body and go. So that final force which pushes me out of this body at the time of death is called udana. So that is a very powerful force which pushes the individual out at the time of death, when the body is no longer able to sustain life for whatever reason. Say I have no blood pressure, my heart is not working, or my brain is not working, then the udana comes into play to get rid of the subtle body, which can then go into higher or lower worlds and then take another body. So these are the five physiological functions. Then the mind, which is the seat of emotions, and the intellect, which is the seat of thoughts. And then vasanas are the causal body. Now these three, the food and the physiological functions, are called the gross body. Gross body means not gross as it is ugly, but gross means we can perceive it. I can see with my eyes, I can feel when I take a deep breath or my heart is beating, I can feel those things. So that's why it is known to us, and it's known to others. Like people, doctor can check your pulse and say, you know what, your heart is irregular. So the food and the physiological functions are called the gross body. The mind and intellect is called the subtle body. Subtle body means it is known to me but not known to you. Like you may be thinking, you know, this is a very boring class, I should leave. But I have no way of knowing whether you are enjoying the class or you are suffering the class. So the mind and intellect is, but I know my own thoughts, I know my own emotions, I know what I'm going to say next. I know that. You don't know exactly what I am going to say, but I know that. And vasana, so that is called the subtle body, and vasanas is called the causal body. So gross body, subtle body, and causal body. Why are vasanas called the causal body? One is they cause me to act. So whatever actions I do, good or bad, they are due to my good or bad tendencies, good or bad vasanas, good or bad desires. Also, they say that the cause of human birth is unfulfilled vasanas. We had certain unfulfilled desires, and to fulfill them, we came to this body. Not only we came to this body, but like in my case, we were born in India, but there were certain of my desires which could not be fulfilled in India. So I flew all the way across the world to the United States, and of all, first in New York, and then of all places landed up in Bakersfield. So there were certain of my tendencies and my karmas that could only be fulfilled in Bakersfield, and that's why I've been here for the last 36 years. So vasanas are the cause of birth. And then beyond these five is Om. Om is the consciousness, the life principle, which sustains all these five. So my body, my mind, my intellect, my physiological functions, my desires, all get life from God's presence within, which is also called the spirit. So that's why we say we are a combination of matter and spirit. Even Jesus says the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. So the Holy Spirit in us is Om. Only difference is that in Vedanta, we say the Father and the Spirit are one. They are not separate. So the life consciousness in me and the life consciousness in the whole universe is one. So that's why we say there is Advaita. There are not two. But, you know, different philosophers interpret this differently. So that is what we believe, that there is only one consciousness, one Om, one Brahman, which is all-pervading. And this whole universe is an expression of that. So this chair is not different from God, this mic, this pointer, this book, everything is divine. Everything is an expression of that divinity. So that's why we love and respect everybody, or we should. Even the inanimate objects need to be treated with respect. So you shouldn't just bang the door or throw things, but treat your things with respect. So what are the differences between mind and intellect? Mind is the emotional factor. Intellect is the thinking factor. The mind is not sure. Like, I'm not sure what I should do. You know, what should I do? Should I do this or should I do that? What kind of job I should take? What kind of career I should pursue? What kind of food I should eat tonight, or where should I go out of town this weekend, or what restaurant? So all those things, the mind is not sure, so it asks the intellect, what do you think we should do? And the intellect is supposed to guide the mind. Generally, the intellect, which is the wisdom, which is the knowledge, And what kind of knowledge? Knowledge got from the scriptures. So a purified intellect is one that has knowledge obtained from the scriptures and then guides the mind in the right direction, and then the mind guides the body. So the intellect is said to be the deciding factor, and the mind is said to be the indecisive factor. That does, I'm not sure what, you know, sometimes you say, I don't know what I should do. I'm not sure. So then the intellect is the one that decides. So one is called samshayatmika buddhi. Other one is called nishchayatmika buddhi. Samshaya means doubt, and nishchaya means firm determination. Also, the mind is said to be like the receiving clerk. Like there is in the office a clerk that receives all the mail. Nowadays, of course, nobody sends mail, but this is in the old days. Nowadays, everything is email. But say the olden days, the clerk is sitting and he receives all the mail and he opens it. And then some of the papers are junk, he throws them. But some of them need a decision. So what does the clerk do? He takes it to the boss and says, sir, this is the mail we have received. What should we do? Now there is this supplier, he wants more product. And then there is this person who is unhappy with our product. And then there is this salesman who's saying that he's having a hard time selling. So all the messages that come are received by the receiving clerk and then presented to the boss. And the boss says, okay, tell the salesman this, tell the supplier this, tell the customer this. So what, how to reply? The answers are given by the boss. So similarly, the mind receives all the impulses from the body, from the eyes, from the ears, from the nose, and then asks the intellect what I should do. Like if there is a person coming who has a gun in his hand, the mind says, you know, there is somebody coming with a gun. And so the intellect says, yeah, gun means dangerous, because intellect has previously seen that gun is danger. So what he tells the body, either lock the door or leave the house or call the police or whatever action is required to protect the individual. So that is told by the intellect. So for preservation. And then the intellect is also the instrument for the higher knowledge, for knowing who is God, who am I, and we're studying the scriptures, whether it's the Bible or the Guru Granth Sahib or the Bhagavad Gita, whatever I have to study and learn and apply in my life is all done by the intellect. Now the question may be that if God is everywhere, why am I not able to see Him? You say God is everywhere. God is in this bottle, in this table. I don't see God. Why we don't see God? Because God is hidden from us by the Maya, by our ignorance. That's why vasanas are also called ignorance. I don't see God everywhere. A saint can, but you and I cannot. You say, oh, I don't see God. Where is God? Have you seen God? We look up somewhere, maybe He's in the sky. But God is everywhere, but not seeing God everywhere, we project differences. Like I like her and I don't like her, and then she's my friend and he's my enemy, and this is my relative and this is my he belongs to my race, my color, my religion, my community, my church. He worships in this church, so he's my friend. But if he worships in the church across the street, he's my enemy. Both are worshipping Jesus, or both are worshipping Krishna, or both. But because they are in the other building across the street. So that is the differences we create. Actually, everything is that. But in our ignorance, we misapprehend. Not seeing God in all, we see the differences. So the example they give is the rope and the snake. You might have heard the example, but just to repeat it. Say there is a rope lying in the, you know, on the street, or maybe in a small country road, you know, going through a forest. There's a small little mud road, and then it's getting dark. It's a little dark. I don't clearly see. You know, it's sunset, and so I see in the distance the rope, but not seeing the rope as a rope, I think it's a snake. I project snake upon that rope. Not seeing the rope, I think it's a snake. And then if I accidentally step on it, oh, the snake bit me. And then I get scared and then I faint and then I run away. And then I say, take me to the hospital because a snake bit me. So not seeing the rope as a rope, I project the snake. So that is called non-apprehension and misapprehension. Not seeing the rope, I project the snake upon it. Another person might say, that's a garland of flowers. Another person might say, that's a crack in the road. So the same object, different people see it differently because it's a little dark. So I see something in the ground, but I'm not sure what it is. Until a wise person comes and shines a flashlight. It's a rope. What were you guys? Somebody was calling it a snake. Somebody was calling it a crack. Somebody was calling it a garland. Somebody was calling it a twig. It's nothing but a rope. So similarly, you and I don't see God everywhere. So we project all the differences upon it. And then I get scared. Oh, this world is giving me so many problems. Oh, I am suffering. Oh, I am this. Oh, I am that. And the wise person comes and tells us that this whole universe is that one. And once he shines the light of knowledge, then all my ignorance is removed. All my fear is removed. And then I see everybody as expression of God, including me. So everything is me. I am everything. Everything is me. So that oneness only comes when there is correct understanding, right understanding, seeing the world as God. That's the understanding. And everything is that. Divinity, including me, everything is that. Not that I am God and you guys are not. No, everything is that. But what we do is we look for happiness in the world and we keep looking. And then when we don't get this different, like last time, you know, my last wife gave me sorrow, but maybe the next wife will give me happiness, or my last husband gave me sorrow. Or my last job gave me sorrow. My next job will give me happiness. Bakersfield gave me sorrow. So maybe San Luis Obispo will give me happiness. India gave me sorrow. So maybe America. So we think by changing places or by changing my spouse or changing my job or changing, you know, some people change their sex. You know, as a male, I'm not happy, so I'll be female. So we look in different actions, but the end result is the same. End result is the same. Unless you find joy within, you can keep changing, but the end result is ignorance. And ignorance, so there's a beautiful story. So there was this man who would go watch a movie, and then every in India they have three shows, you know, 3 p.m., 6 p.m., 9 p.m., you know, three shows. And every time he would leave in the middle of the movie, he would buy the ticket, go sit in the theater and leave in the middle. And the usher said, what's wrong with this guy? He has been coming for a week. Movie has been going on. Every time he takes a ticket and leaves in the middle, what's wrong with this guy? So one day he stopped and he says, why do you keep leaving in the middle? Don't you want to see the whole movie? He says, yeah, I've seen the whole movie before. I saw it on the first day. He says, why do you keep buying ticket and come again and leave in halftime, halfway in the movie? What's wrong with you? He says, no, it's like that. You remember, you have seen the movie? Usher says, yeah, I saw the movie on the first day. He said, don't you remember that there is a scene where there was this girl who wants to take a bath in the lake? And so she starts taking off her clothes. As soon as she starts taking off the clothes in the movie, a train comes. And by the time the train is gone, she's already in the water. You know, that's the director has done it. Soon as she just starts taking off her clothes, immediately the train comes, you can't see her. And the next thing, when the train is gone, she's already in the water. He says, yeah, I remember that scene. He said, but why do you leave after that scene? Why don't you wait? He says, and why do you keep watching the movie again and again? He said, I am hoping at least one day the train will be late. At least one day the train will be late. So, you know how men are. So he keeps waiting, but the end result is the same. You know, things don't change. So that's our problem, that we think that the world will give me joy, but the world will give you the same result. You have to. So same thing, like he was looking for a different result, but no, the result is the same.
New story.
Huh? What do you say?
New story.
New story. She likes this story. He says, ek din to gaadi der se aayegi.
New story. Yeah. So I'm just saying, what, the train? I have imagined it was going to happen.
And what happened is we look for joy outside. That's what I said. We look for joy in the objects. If I eat something, I will get joy. Or if I hold something or touch something or smell or taste. Or if I see Alaska, I'll have joy. If emotions, we look for joy. You know, if this person loves me, I'll be happy. If this person says, good morning, I love you, I'll be happy. If this person doesn't say, I love you, I'll be miserable. Or we look for joy in thoughts, in concepts. If the Republicans win, I'll be happy. If the Democrats win, I'll be unhappy. So we look for joy in the finite things of the world, and finite things will only give you finite joy, temporary joy. If you want to find permanent joy, look within. And how? They say inner evolution equals happiness. So when I grow internally, when my mind and intellect become filled with love for God, with knowledge about God, when my vasanas are reduced, that is called inner evolution. When my mind loves God, when my intellect knows God, and when my vasanas become minimal and become pure, so my desires are pure. So once this person is evolved internally, then and then only you can experience God's presence within. That's why the scriptures say, you are that divinity you are. So how do we do that? By slowly increasing love for God. God is not something to be feared, but something to be loved. God is the life principle within me. God is not sitting somewhere like a judge and telling me, do this, do that. If you don't, I will punish you. We are punished not by God, we are punished by our karmas. So good or bad karmas give good or bad results. And so by loving God emotionally and intellectually, by reading the books and the scriptures and studying and, you know, listening to wise people, going to the church or, you know, listening to pastors and wise people and reducing my desires, my selfishness by sharing, slowly when the mind becomes pure, then the life principle shines. That's why when we are in the presence of a saint or a wise person, the divinity becomes very clear, that this person is divine. God's presence one can see very clearly in a wise person. You and I, the consciousness is covered by our desires, by our ignorance, by our selfishness and all that. So that's why when we pray to the sun god, you know, one of the prayers in the Upanishad is Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasyapi Hitam Mukham Tatvam Pushana Pavranu Satya Dharmaya Drishtai. O sun god, my wisdom, the self within, is covered by this body, which is golden. Golden means rapi, it's yellowish gold. Our body is brownish, yellowish gold. Also golden means I'm so fascinated with wealth, with gold, that my mind is not able to perceive God. So, O sun god, when we pray, we say, O sun god, which represents light, represents knowledge, remove my ignorance so I may see God's presence as my own higher nature. So the purpose of prayer and the purpose of studying is to realize that divinity and I are one. Because he is everywhere, he or she, that God is everywhere. So if it's everywhere, it has to be within me also. So this Om represents God's presence. So just to summarize, we talked about the five sheets, the five functions, the differences between mind and intellect, and how to truly perceive God's presence everywhere. And through inner evolution, reach permanent happiness. Through outer objects, I only get temporary happiness. So that is the essence of this message today. Any questions, any comments?
Coming to functions, apana, doesn't say perception in the book?
No, prana is
prana.
Prana is intake.
Prana intake.
So prana, intake is perception. Intake.
Perception.
Yeah, so intake through the eyes, through the nose, through the mouth.
Yeah, that's right.
All the perception through the ears.
Yeah, so that's perception.
Perception. So I perceive through
everything,
my eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I hear through my ears. So that is prana. That is intake.
Intake.
So whatever I take in from all my sense organs, not only eyes, not only mouth, but through listening, you know, all those, through smelling, tasting,
is excretion. Actually, I mean, how I try to remember is A means absence, excretion, get rid of it.
Right. So whatever you don't need, you know, whatever we excrete, and it could be sweat, it could be saliva, you know, it could be, I mean, saliva, of course, you need, but whatever we don't need, we excrete. That is apana. Samana is digestion. Vyana is circulation. And then udana is
knowledge.
In the book, Swamiji says knowledge, but other scholars also say at the time of death, it gets rid of the subtle body, pushes it out forcefully. That's why when you sneeze, real loud, that also is udana, because it is forcefully expelling the breath. So anything that is forcefully expelled is udana, when you use your full force. So that to also to remove the subtle body and push it out needs a lot of energy. So at the time of death, the body, this udana, pushes the subtle body out. And some people say it is also higher thinking, where it takes us to the higher knowledge. So there are two interpretations of udana.
Yeah, reaching the higher
higher worlds, higher and other worlds. So both.
They might not even give you the true answer.
Right.
You might say, is everything okay? Are you mad at me? And they might say, no, I'm not mad at you, but they really are. So you might not even give the truth.
Yes.
Get the truth. So what's the point of using all your energy to try to figure it all
right
out? You know,
so. Yeah, no, it makes sense. Because it's like you go to a party and there are two people talking and they both know you and they look at you and then again they keep on talking and start laughing.
Yeah.
You say, these two people are laughing at me. You don't even know that, but you start thinking in your mind, you know what, these two people, they may be laughing about something else, but because I don't know what they're saying, I'm far away, I misperceive, like you said, misperceive, misunderstand.
Yeah.
And then when I go close and say, what were you laughing? And then they'll tell us, oh, there was this joke or what.
Joke.
But I get angry for no reason. So it's the same thing, you know, what they say is that, how do you know you are spiritually evolving? How do you know? I asked one wise saint and he said, if things that used to bother you don't bother you anymore, then you are evolving. So if you are able to go beyond all these likes and dislikes and all that, then and then alone you know that you are evolving.
Yeah.
So this person, if he gets upset about this, then he still has some ways to go.
Somehow I was just misperceiving that.
Yeah, the four paths.
Yeah,
the path of service, the path of love, path of knowledge.
Yeah,
so karma yoga, with the body I serve God, with the mind I love God, with the intellect I know God, and with all the three together I meditate. So four paths, path of service, path of love, path of knowledge, and then the path of meditation. So all four paths lead to one goal. So through service, I serve God. Through mind, I love God. Through intellect, I know God. And all three put together is when I meditate. I sit and meditate. All three functions come in there. Yeah, that's the four paths to God. Yes. Some people call it Hatha Yoga, which not only includes meditation, but doing all the yoga exercises, breathing, and, you know, and sitting in one place, you know, for months and years. So that is Hatha Yoga. Yeah, so the four paths, yes.
Okay, so